Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldea.
It's been a while, freedom child.
Women, have you heard? The show is coming to Austin, Texas. Join me Saturday, November 16th for the first ever live recording of the Free Birth Society podcast. We'll have an amazing guest tell us her truly wild Texan free birth story, plus a tell-all Q&A with me. It will all be emceed by the epic Austin beloved local Devonna May. An actual evening of hanging out with free birthing women, basking in story medicine. Yes, please. Make it a date night or come with your besties. It's going to be so fun. Tickets are on sale now. Go grab yours and then come hug me in real life. Link for tickets are in the show notes. I'll see you soon.
Yes. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
This is a fun start to the whole conversation, because I'm just coming to this realizing that you just had your second baby just, what did you say, 60 hours ago or something?
Yes, he was born at 12:50 a.m. and it's 2 p.m. of the third day, so whatever that works out to be.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I'm getting you on your third day postpartum. Wow. So I mean, with that, you know, I really just want to pass this off to you. You have a you know, really important story with some really interesting layers to it that I want to get into. And then, of course, I'd love to have time to hear about how this last one went, especially so fresh out of the experience. So who are you before you are pregnant with your first child? And why do you wind up making the choices you make?
Before I knew I was pregnant, I was very, very much in the boss babe phase of my life. And I was in Las Vegas doing some presentations for this company that I worked for as a consultant. And I woke up the one morning and I wasn't feeling very good. The presentation didn't go very well. And because I was just kind of in this like fog and I didn't know why. And so anyways, I came home and took a pregnancy test and found out that I was pregnant with our first. And we had just gotten married that summer. So we had been trying, but not, you know, really trying. We were just not trying, I guess. So it was a surprise. And so kind of just did the thing that you think you're supposed to do when you find out you're pregnant. And that's call your family doctor, right, and book your, you know, 8-week appointment or whatever it is. And like, oddly enough, I was not a doctor person. As a kid, my mom was never really into that. She did take me for routine immunizations until I had my first seizure, which I'll get into. But doctors weren't really like, we didn't do checkups. We didn't, it was like, if there was something wrong, then you might go to the doctor. And that was kind of the extent of it. But still, that was the idea that I had growing up, is that when you find out you're pregnant, you call your doctor and you have an 8-week appointment. So that's what I did. And then in the midst of that, so as I'm waiting to go to the doctor, I ended up getting very sick, like severe morning sickness, which eventually turned into hyperemesis, which again is a whole nother story that I probably won't have time to get into today. But this pregnancy, I actually cured my hyperemesis with German new medicine, which is fascinating. So
I mean, I think you have to talk about that.
Sure. Yeah, I can. I totally will. And Yeah. So when I go to this doctor's appointment, I am like desperate for some sort of relief from this awful morning sickness that is, really imposing in my life. And I was like, I had, well, it was one company, but we had two locations. And then I worked as a consultant for this like consulting firm. And this was all cheerleading related. So that's what my business was I ran a competitive cheerleading program. So it's quite popular here in Canada as it is in the States. So that's what I was doing. And then I worked as a consultant for this consulting firm where I would help other gym owners just make a business out of their cheerleading fun thing, right? So that was kind of the gig that I had going. So this sickness was really imposing in this heavy workload that I had. And so I was looking for some sort of relief. Additionally, I had from when I was a child developed a seizure disorder. So when I was 4 years old, at one of my routine immunization appointments, I received the injection and then I fainted and had a seizure. From that point onwards, I would faint and seizure. So it's like a vasovagal response. So the faint is the first thing that happens, and then the vasovagal is the seizure that comes with it. And so from that point onward, basically any like medical intervention of any kind would cause me to faint and have a seizure. So I did still get some immunizations after that, but we were a little bit more like choosier with them. It wasn't just the full schedule. Yeah. So in school, they would ask the kids to line up like class by class to go see the public health nurse for the immunization. And so I would have the liberty to say, actually, I go to the doctor's office for mine, so that I wouldn't have this, seizure response at school. It happened at a variety of different, like in a variety of different situations. But so that was something that removed me a little bit from doctors and the system was this fear of fainting and having a seizure as a result of whatever, procedure or they wanted to perform on me, basically. So I was never really.
Was it clear to you and your mom that you were vaccine injured?
I think sort of. My mom is very anti-vax now. She had a career in special education. And so she saw a lot of children who were vaccine injured, and she knew that they were vaccine injured, although it was a very unpopular opinion to have. But I think when it's your own child, maybe you just may you might not want to see it, or maybe the severity of what she was exposed to in her work kind of made my
You're
injury seem,
seething.
yeah, seem less than. But eventually we figured it out and I stopped
Okay.
completely.
Okay. It's just so intense. I mean, so many people deal with this. So, and then the gaslighting of being vaccine injured and not wanting to claim that. And so many mothers today are, reckoning with exactly what she had to face, watching their children be harmed, and then everything in their life is telling them to keep going. And it's really sick.
Yeah,
It's really
it is
sad.
really sick.
Yeah. Okay.
So that kind of like removed me from the system a little bit in my for my benefit because instead of wanting to have these interventions, it actually so my husband and I would watch birth videos to kind of prepare for birth, right? Like this is what we're going to experience. And I would like sob and I would be having like full on panic attacks while watching these YouTube videos. Just like, oh my God, like I'm gonna have to do this because they're hooking them up to monitors and they're
Oh.
injecting them with all these epidurals and all of this stuff. And I'm like I was shaking. And well, I'll get into it again. But when I watched my first home birth video, I was just like, oh my Oh, that looked amazing. Like there was no part of me that was afraid or anything of the sort. It was just like, that is what I want to do. And that's kind of what put me on this trajectory of what started as home birth and then turned into free birth because I couldn't get a midwife, luckily. And yeah, so anyways, it was just really interesting how like just watching that woman go through that experience was so traumatic for me that it was like a red flag, like I can't do that. And then when I watched the home birth to go,
First.
okay, that I want to do.
Well, I mean, does anyone watch those hospital births and are like, oh yeah, I can't wait till I'm sedated and numbed and disassociated and have strangers inside of me? Like, that's a very, very normal, appropriate, animalistic response to watching women be abused.
Absolutely.
You
And
know?
tortured,
And tortured. Yeah.
really.
That's very normal.
Like,
And you know, they say that like in birth culture, people are like, if you want to circumcise your son, you should watch the procedure. And if you can stomach that, you know, then do it. And like obviously no one can stomach it because it's absolutely horrific. I think it's a good practice to watch. Now we have this technology available to us. Oof, yeah.
absolutely. Yeah. And like just in the birth that I had a couple of days ago, after the placenta came, a whole bunch of like clots came out like after about like 10 minutes. And I just thought to myself, like, if I had been in the hospital, they would have scraped me out. Like they would have done some sort of awful when my body is just, it just does this. Like it's just so perfectly normal. Yeah. So, okay. So can I kind of backtrack to, so the doctor's appointment. So I'm looking for relief of these, morning sickness, hyperemesis symptoms, which I did eventually get after being referred to an OBGYN. So I was seeing an OBGYN and I was taking Zofran is the brand name, ondansetron is the drug, throughout the entire pregnancy, which in itself is just something that I would never want to do. Like for people who don't know, it's a chemotherapy drug for children who are going through chemotherapy. That's an intense drug for an infant, not even a newborn, for a baby in the womb to be receiving that drug, So anyways, that was really scary in itself. But so I was seeing this OBGYN. I was having regular ultrasounds. I was taking ondansetron. And my mom the whole time, actually, when I was a kid, my mom always was trying to encourage me that birth wasn't scary, it wasn't painful, that I should have a natural birth. And it just never really, I didn't really soak it in because, there's this one voice over here that's your mom and really encouraging. And then there's like all these 1 million really loud voices over here that
Well, and
are.
how were you born? What did she have a natural birth with you?
Yes, I was born. I was born in the hospital. I think it was within about an hour after they got to the hospital. And my mom had a midwife. My mom says that she had like a really positive birth experience. And I think for having a hospital birth with a midwife, I think that she really did have a really good experience. I wasn't
She
separated from her after birth.
must have to say that stuff to you, because most moms aren't saying that to their daughters, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. So she was really encouraging me to kind of go that route. And then I went for a prenatal massage. This is kind of how I move into the free birth path. I went for a prenatal massage, and the masseuse told me that she was a doula, and I didn't even really know what a doula was. I actually thought that doulas and midwives were kind of the same thing, which I think a lot of people do. Which they aren't.
Well, they kind of are, actually, like
Well, yes.
in a way, you know.
Yes. So I called my mom after and I was like, oh, like my massage was today and the woman is a doula. And so my mom was like, well, I'm hiring this doula for you. Like,
Aww.
no questions asked. I'm hiring her for you so that, you know, I couldn't say that I can't afford it or have an excuse for not having her in my life. So my mom hired the doula, and we had our first meeting, and I told the doula my birth plan. So my original birth plan that my OBGYN and I came up with was, and this is all to avoid having a seizure during birth, which would result in a C-section. That's the premise that this birth plan is written on. Oh yeah. So, as soon as my contractions start, I'm going to go to the hospital right away. That way I can be fully hooked up to all IV and all, you know, machines and everything, anything that would trigger me to faint and have a seizure long before it would be considered dangerous.
No.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty bad.
This is like a so real industry. Was...
Mm. Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's not
this
a,
is a real story.
Yeah, this is a real story. Oh, so weird. Okay.
So, yeah, so that was the plan. And so I told my doula, and like, bless her heart, because she took it so well when I'm sure she was thinking, like, this is crazy. Because she was like very, well, she was very open to the idea of home birth, as much as she could be, which I'll talk about. But yeah, so anyway, so she suggested to me that maybe I just look into hypnobirthing. Maybe birth doesn't have to be as scary as I think that it's going to be. Maybe it doesn't have to be this traumatic event. With all the machines and the needles, just look into hypnobirthing, and you know, you can have a nice natural hospital birth, was kind of what she handed to me on a platter. So after that meeting, that's when I started watching these home birth videos, because all the hypnobirthing stuff on YouTube is women birthing at home. Well, most of it is. And so that's kind of where I got that idea. So then I went back to my OBGYN for my, you know, next checkup. And I told her about this birth plan, and I actually had it written out. So it was now like, I was now on the, now the idea is like no Pitocin, like no IV, no epidural. And so I had it all written out, and what's it called when you, what's the term in the hospital when you don't want them to cut the cord?
Delayed cord clamping.
Thank you. This is the postpartum brain, delayed cord clamping, and things like that. So I show my OBGYN this new plan. So this is like completely opposite of the plan that her and I came up with. So there's probably a little bit of ego involved in her response as well, right? So yeah, so I showed her this plan on paper, and she excused herself from her office, went and got a pen and a highlighter, I'm pretty sure. Anyways, came back to the office and started like scratching things out on my birth plan. So the one that I remember specifically was the Pitocin for the placenta. As I said, very specifically, I do not want Pitocin to release the placenta. It'll come naturally. She crossed it out and then explained to me why it would probably be necessary.
So she's crossing out the things that she's saying no to.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Hey, at least she was honest. It's even worse when they're like, yeah, the bait and switch, you know, like, oh yeah, we can do all of this. And then, haha.
Absolutely. Like no. In hindsight, I would have much rather her have done what she did right. than for me to go to the hospital expecting her to follow my plan. Yeah. Yeah. Because it wouldn't have been followed. Nope. Yeah. So I make it to the car without crying. And I get into the car and I just start sobbing because I am now feeling like I have no support. This woman that I, you know, thought I could trust to safely deliver my baby, I couldn't anymore. And so I started looking into midwives. But the midwives don't service our area because we're too far from like a major city for them.
Meaning the medical midwives that are ordained by the government itself.
Yes, those ones.
Just making sure everyone's following. Well, one of my missions is to really clarify the difference, right, of medical midwifery and authentic midwives. So we're referencing the registered government agents that present as midwives that are given air quotes for free to Canadian residents. If you're a good girl, you live in the right distance and you follow the rules and your pregnancy follows all the rules, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
The Matrobirth Directory is finally open to the public. Through the end of the year, you can get founding member pricing and join the largest holistic directory of badass women professionals on the spectrum of sovereign birth support. We have women listed from over 30 countries and growing. This is the place to find your sovereign birth attendant, your women's circle, village prenatal, maybe even a massage therapist or postpartum chef. Be a part of weaving this worldwide web, a holistic network that can connect women of sovereign values and ways of life together with ease. No more underground nonsense. This is the place that can connect us all to all of the wise woman offerings of our communities. Head over to matrobirthdirectory.com and become a member today.
So you start looking for government.
Yeah, so now I'm looking for a midwife. Can't find one. So then I approach my doula because I still kind of think that they're the same thing. Though, like, you know, they sort of are, like you said, but they're also, like, they're super different. So when I went to her and said, hey, like, would you, you know, deliver my baby? She said, oh, like, I'll come, like, I'll be here, but, like, I will lose my license as a doula if I attend an unassisted birth.
She doesn't have a license.
Or her, like, certification or whatever. Yeah.
But that's important, yeah, because doulas aren't licensed. There's no, certifications are voluntary, and there's no punishment to not have them, which is a distinct difference from licensure. Licensure is going to happen from the state, the province, the government. And if you are not licensed in that trade, you can be punished for it. So we rolled out a certification for FBS stuff and women were so confused and they were like, we thought you were against licensure. Like, certification is just like, it's like nothing. Like, any company can just be like, here's our certification, you know? Anyway, but yeah.
So you came, you saw. Yeah.
Depending, whatever certification she stood with, created a made-up scope that states she's not allowed to be at a birth without a medical provider.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So at one point she did say that she'd go stand on the front porch when the baby was coming. And that way, you know, she would protect her. So she was trying. Like, I give her full credit for, like, really being kind of open to something that was a little bit crazy for her. But truly what happened was I stumbled across the Free Birth Society, which is why I'm so honored to be here, because, you know, what you do had such a huge impact, on my life, like truly my life, as a result of free birth. And I still remember, like, the first video that I watched. Yeah. So anyway, so I stumbled across the Free Birth Society. A friend had kind of said, like, hey, like, you should watch these birth videos. And so that's where I ended up. And so the more that I, just got in touch with, I guess, like, the primal nature of human birth, not just animal birth. I realized that I didn't need anybody there, that this was just something that I was going to do. So I had my doula, and she came after baby and she brought, you know, something for us. I don't remember what it was.
So she knew your plans and it was all good.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And while there's another layer kind of within that too. So at one point, we were thinking, we had a friend who, was a firefighter, trained firefighter. And so she lied to me and said that she had taken, like, midwifery training through her, firefighting school, which would have been, like, probably a 3-hour presentation from some government midwife who came in, was like, if you're at a fire and a baby's being born, you know, like it would have been something completely ridiculous.
Well,
right?
I've been to these trainings, the EMT trainings, and they are done on a dummy with no head. Okay. Like right there. It's so messed up. They can't even bother to put a head on the person that you learned to catch from. It's so
Yeah, that
horrible.
Would be too personal.
No, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So she weirdly lied. And what was her goal? To be invited to your birth?
Yes. And I believe that her goal was to sabotage my birth. And so at one point, like a few weeks before he was born, I went over there. She said, "Hey, can we get together? I just want to talk to you about a few things." And I was like, "Okay, I don't know what you need to talk to me about, but okay." Again, I'm glad I went, right? And as opposed to just inviting her into my space and then having her sabotage my birth. And so again, she told me a bunch of crazy things, but the one that I remember was, "I just want to let you know, after baby is born, I'm going to have to do a fundal massage on you. It's going to hurt, but I'm just going to have to do that."
Weird.
And yeah, isn't it? And so like looking back now, I go, okay, it's just like, it's the abuse being passed down, because she's had two hospital births. So she was abused. So this is now her opportunity to abuse somebody. And it's not conscious. It's just like this awful, you know, outcome of being abused.
And it's even more complicated than just that, because it's really pitched and absorbed as necessary. And so it's like, we know this will hurt, but like we need to save your life, you know? So it's like even sicker in a way, because there is a justification to it. It's a lie, but the way in which it's taught is that fundal massage will prevent you from hemorrhaging, you know? And so I get to do this thing that's totally necessary. Ugh.
So
you're really moving your needle a lot in this pregnancy.
Oh yeah.
Like we're starting with OBGYN, ultrasounds, pharmaceuticals, planning for a really, really like dark, twisted birth with your shitty, shitty, shitty doctor. And now we're like fighting off bad witches for your free birth. Like this is a big arc in just a couple of months.
Yeah, very much so. Which continues into, you know, my motherhood journey. Just kind of like major shift for who I am as a person, obviously. And like most of this started around 30 weeks. And so that's, you know, sometimes I see women who are kind of on the same path as I was. And I just think to myself, like, you have so much time to change your mind still, like so much time. It's not too late to completely throw away everything that you have been told, taught, and have prepared for up till this point. Like, it's not too late. All you need is your body. That's all you need.
Well, it's part of why it's in large part, like kind of fundamentally why I'm so fascinated by the choice to sovereign birth or the act of sovereign birthing, because it's an act of not doing, right? Like it's to not get in the car. It's to not go somewhere. Like you can literally just not, and a baby will come out. You can just allow life to happen. And you know what I mean? It's like, and it's obviously because of the social structure, it's like this active deprogramming, and it's an active state of engagement for allowing something else. But really, just literally, it's to not do anything, which is kind of a unique arena, right? Because everything else is like, you have to go and do it. If you're going to create something in your life, you're going to start a business, you're going to find your husband, you're going to blah, 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 blah. But this biological act to allow it, this whole thing about free birth is really just allowing life and not fucking it up and not dramatizing it and not sabotaging it and not complicating it. And you know what I mean? Like stripped down, it's just to not do all this nonsense, which is in a way, I think very comforting that You don't actually have to learn anything. You don't actually have to do anything at all. It's not even like this big choice. It's just going to happen. Like, free birth is going to happen unless you stop it once you're pregnant, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I really like that way of looking at it. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, I don't really remember exactly where I was at, but maybe I'll jump.
We're everywhere. You're at the end of your pregnancy. You fought off the liar. The doula's like not into it, but she's still going to postpartum you.
So I'll jump into like the breech now.
Okay.
So around 34 weeks, he's sitting breech. There's still plenty of room to move at that point, obviously. Around 36 weeks is when the OBGYN starts to tell me that it's probably like he's probably not going to move. So that's when I kind of start to have this like new battle. Cause now I'm like at 30 weeks, I decide, yeah.
I didn't realize you were starting to, you continued seeing the doctor.
Oh yeah, I did.
Okay. So you're totally still in it, but then like sidebar planning something else.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Which I mean was part of my journey and I don't regret it. Because I did learn a lot and I can share that with people now. But of course I wish that I didn't because of all of the fear mongering that went along with it. Right. Yeah. So I'm kind of like, okay, I'm going to do this home birth, free birth thing. And now the OBGYN is telling me that he's breech and that's not safe. And that I'm going to need to potentially have a C-section and all of these things. And so then that kind of sends me off on this like trajectory of like a lot of research and relearning about things, I guess. My mom and I took like Dr. Stu Fishbein. I don't know if people are familiar with him, but he's known for breech vaginal delivery in the States. He
he's
does
a medical some doctor.
Yeah. And he does some training courses for midwives and other doctors and whomever. We signed up. There was no requirement. So we took his course and we were just like unlearning things, which is what made what you said before made me think of it. When you do nothing, it's just going to happen, right? Like you don't need to spend. So in hindsight, you don't need to spend so much time trying to get rid of things if you just don't bring them in the first place. But that's where I was at. I was busy getting rid of stuff and relearning things. And so then I kind of like backtracked a little bit and I was like, okay, you know what? We will go to Saskatoon, which is like the bigger city near us. And I'll free birth. Well, I'll attempt to free birth in the hotel room near the hospital. So I'm still like totally being, you know, tricked into thinking that I can't do this and that something wrong is something bad is going to happen. And yeah, eventually I did let that go. So I had this breech thing. I had this doula that was semi-supportive. And then I had this friend who was going to abuse me after my birth if she didn't call 911 during the birth, because that's her profession and, you know, just a whole thing. Yeah. So now we're 42 weeks. So he was born, 41 and six is when labor started. And that's like my own tracking from my period. The doctors had me at, I think 40 and five, like by measurements, but you can't, when you plant a seed, you count the day you plant the seed in the dirt. You don't count the day that, you know, that it starts to sprout. That's not how it works. So it was 42 weeks when he was born. Labor begins. My husband still thinks that we are going to call, the firefighter friend. And I just didn't, I didn't let him in on that because I didn't want to, this was a lot for him and I didn't want him to try and sabotage my birth. And now knowing he wouldn't have, he's super supportive. He was so proud of the fact that his wife, you know, had the baby at home and he was wonderful, but I had a fear, which is probably from other, like talking to other women who have these less than supportive partners. that if I told him I didn't want to invite her anymore, that he would, you know, get nervous and try and call 911 or something. I didn't know. So I didn't tell him going into labor that I wasn't going to call her. But once I was in labor, I was like, nope, no, nobody's coming here except for my mom. So my mom came. And yeah, so they got the pool ready. I labored in the pool for, it was quite a while.
And your mom's just like down with the free birth.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. My mom was like coming over every day and watching videos with me. And yeah, she was my number one fan for sure. Yeah. And still is. And yeah, so I'm out of everyone that, you know, surrounded me during that time, I'm most grateful for my mom, like truly. And yeah, so I labor in the pool for probably like 5 to 7 hours ish. I don't remember exactly what time I got into the water, but I would say it was about 5 to 7 hours. So a couple interesting things happened while I was in labor, and just, you know, the more I learned about births. So I actually attend births now. I just call myself a birth witness. I've done some certifications and things, but I want to be who my mom was for me, just someone that'll show up and not, you know, project any fear into the room, like someone that'll just be there and will bring you a glass of water and will, just be that person that a woman really needs when she's in labor.
You're describing a good midwife.
Mm-hmm.
Just like
absolutely
presence that, like, there, we don't, I get that Canada, maybe you shouldn't call yourself that, but like for everyone listening, you're just describing a really good midwife. You're describing what I do. You're describing what we teach. You know, it's not like a third entity where we need a new name for it. This is the work of midwifery, but obviously it's all smoke and mirrors out in the mainstream.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. So sorry, I'm lost my spot in my story now.
You were in the water.
Oh yes. Okay. Yeah. Hours. So I have this friend, and I just attended her birth. And so she had a VBAC, her first birth, she was in the hospital and she felt pushy and they told her not to push because she was only, I don't know, 5 centimeters or whatever. But they told her to not listen to her body is what they did and sabotaged her birth as a result. And so I was in the water with my son and I was pushing for, I want to say 4 hours is about the time that I was pushing. Like, and it was because it felt good when the surges came. It felt good if I pushed. So that's what I did. I just listened to my body. It was so simple. And then finally it was time to kind of like push him out, like the final emergence. And so I didn't even really know that he was coming, which is interesting because with the birth that I just had, I knew he was coming. but I guess I maybe it's because it was my second birth. Maybe that's why. But I didn't really know that he was coming. So like, I do have a video of the birth. It's on your Instagram also. If people have seen it, it's just like the body coming out because we didn't know he was coming. So the video was like, oh, he's coming. Okay. Let's start recording. And I really wanted a video because I wanted to be able to inspire other women because I had watched so many videos and I wanted to give something back to the birth community because I was so grateful for all these women that had captured their birth, for me to learn from. So yeah, so his body comes, kind of all in one, like his arms were still inside and he kind of like wriggled his arms out. And then 4 minutes go by until his head is born. So even, on your Instagram channel, that was, a lot of people were commenting on that video, saying how, oh, that's so dangerous. And oh my gosh, can't believe, you know, all of the classic things when things don't just fit into a perfect little box. But I had no fear. Like there was not an ounce or a thought in my mind of like, oh no, something's going wrong now. like nothing. It was just like, and so one contraction passed and it just, it wasn't strong enough. It wasn't powerful enough to birth this head. And so I just waited. I waited for a stronger one, and a stronger one came about 4 minutes after the body came out. And that's when the head came out, and he was perfect. He was absolutely perfect. My husband caught him, and I brought him up, and he was just perfect. He was very quiet. Just kind of like looked around. And that was another thing that a lot of people commented on the video, was that he was so quiet after he was born. And again, like there was not a single part of me that questioned or doubted that what I had just done was anything short of perfect.
Was there anything you learned from the Fishbein teachings that you used in your breach?
No, nothing. No. The only, I would say the confidence to know that it was achievable, I guess, but in terms of like, hands-on kind of things, no.
Just correct me if I'm wrong, but like my understanding of his approach is not like just go with your body and it'll be fine.
I don't remember like a lot of details from his teachings. I do remember that like the first thing he says is hands off, like hands off the breech.
But he means that for providers. He doesn't mean that for the mom.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. And he teaches a lot of hands-on maneuvers, which are just not necessary.
So hands off, but also hands on.
Yeah.
Got it.
Typical of a medical doctor.
Well, and you know, my understanding of when people ask me to prep them for breech and all of that, you know, one of the kind of common understandings is that if you can, you hold off from pushing for as long as possible and let the baby get down, 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 and let the head get down, 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 down before you're pushing. And yet you openly, comfortably push for 4 hours, you know, and this is where, you know, like my students and my clients and everyone who interacts with me, they want guidelines. They want to think about it in this way that it can't actually be delivered. It just can't be delivered through these, like, if it's like this, you do this, and then this will happen, you know, and that's how the medical system pitches it. And that's how, you know, we want it, but it just isn't like that, because here's your story where you pushed your ass off for 4 hours. But, you know, I also do know stories where women didn't know their babies were breech and they pushed and their baby died. And they do believe that the pushing was a part of not supporting life, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like, yes, mm-hmm. all of this is here. There isn't a right way to birth your breech baby. There's a whole array of it and there are no guarantees. And it's just, that's a really big arena to sit in, as you know, since you walked it.
Yeah.
It's a really big deal that there just aren't actually rules.
Yeah. And I think like you have to take radical responsibility for your life and for your baby's life and for what you're doing. And I think that that's a really big part of what free birth looks like, because things can go wrong doing anything. Things can go wrong when you, like just the other day, there was a fatal car crash a couple days before our baby was born. And I thought to myself, oh, you know, that's life. Sometimes you live and sometimes you die. And that's just, you know, part of this culture that we live in, this like liability culture, right? Where you want to blame everyone for what you got going on and no one wants to take responsibility.
Well, and then and there's another layer though, that most people really wholeheartedly believe that your baby has a higher survival chance in the hospital. So it's like, more complicated than just we have to take responsibility and sometimes you live and sometimes you die and death can happen at any time. Like, yes, all of that. But then also you and I are of an opinion and of a consciousness and of a reality where home birth and physiological birth and mother-led birth is obviously setting our babies up for the most successful survival and thrivival possible. And that just isn't shared by the majority of people. Most people have been brainwashed. Don't give a shit. The facts aren't there. Like, there's no actual facts that babies are doing better in the hospital. But, you know, okay, there's this, you know, ideology. There's a brainwashing, you know, that's been going on for quite some time, as we know. And so that's another piece to it that I think is important for us to remember in these conversations. If everyone believed that you'd only survive going to the hospital if you walked, and if you drove to the, I'm sorry, let's say the grocery store, like if everyone, let me come up with it really quick. If everyone believed that driving to the grocery store was the only way to survive, and if anyone walked, they had a very high chance of dying, right? Like, it's almost like that. It's like, yeah, ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous. So then when someone decides to walk, they're like, ugh. You know, it's like, oh, look, I did it. Like, I walked and I got my groceries and wow, I really did it. It's not a big deal at all. And everyone's like, you just got so lucky.
Yeah, I was going to say, you just got lucky.
Like, well, okay. Except that, like, I walk everywhere and I don't even have a car. And like, this is a totally different consciousness than what I live in. But you know what I mean? So there's the conditioning, of course, that's such an interesting, yeah, layer to this whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh, for sure.
With him, with the breach, yeah, I'm curious if you want to speak at all to your levels of fear and anxiety around navigating the risk here, you know, and the great unknown of choosing to do this on your own. And like you said, of taking responsibility, knowing breach comes with its own set. All birth is risky, but it comes with like its own set. And it certainly has a heightened energy around it for sure. Mm-hmm. And so how did you feel with all of that? Like, how did you cope with it?
Yeah, there was another layer of fear kind of plastered on top of everything when that was presented to us. What really kind of set or made me feel more at peace, I guess, with all of it, was one of my last appointments with the OBGYN. She was starting to figure out that we were probably going to have the baby at home and she wasn't going to be a part of it. And so at one of the last appointments, it might've even been the last appointment, she gave me a photocopy of, or like a print off from the online textbook that she studied from in university. So it was like the Canadian Journal of Obstetrics. And it was the breech, like pamphlet or whatever section of that book. And I read it, and to my absolute disbelief, it was actually for, I mean, if you read between the lines, it was for breech vaginal delivery as the safer option. Like, every single thing that's in this text is for that. And the rate at which, well, this is again here in Canada, but the rate that was in that book for like death of the infant for a regular head down birth was 0.01. And the rate for a breech baby was 0.02. Mm. So they tell you that the chance of your baby dying is twice as high.
Yeah.
But what they don't tell you is how low that number is. And that's in the hospital where it's already more dangerous. Mm-hmm. So that was really when I was like, okay. And so another kind of layer in this whole story is this is all going on during COVID. My son is almost four. So I'm being bombarded by the lies of the medical system, you know, in every other way. So it's like, oh, seeming it's the same way that they lie about the COVID statistics is how they lie about this.
Got it.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah. So that was, you know, almost a blessing in disguise that it was like, you know, whatever, these two things kind of being thrown in your face as big lies at the same time. So
I take it you didn't have any seizures during your physiological birth?
No, none at all. Yeah.
And so you have this breech baby, he comes out, he's quiet, he's perfect, and you've done it. Your mom is there, your husband is there. Is there anything else?
What next?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we did one silly thing, and we took him to the hospital for a checkup. Yeah. That was kind of like, and I don't really stand behind this anymore. I think that it's really up to the woman, the mother, to make all of these decisions. But that was kind of something that my husband had said, like, okay, like, we'll, I'm happy to have this baby at home as long as we can go get him checked to make sure he's okay after.
Ew.
Yeah.
God.
So that's what we did. We took
him. You got your placenta out first, though.
Yeah, we took him like the next day or even 2 days later.
Just this which wild idea that someone else that isn't the mother, someone else needs to like sign off. It gets so misogynistic. And I get that it's unconscious. I'm not like saying your dude's a bad guy. It's just so misogynistic. It's so anti-mother. It's so deeply anti-mother that there is a higher authority about this cub than the woman who just worked her ass off for a year to create it and birth it and know it and nurse it. It's so offensive.
Yeah. And it, like, even for my husband, like, he has had so much growth as a man since that experience. Like, we just had a baby. Like, there have been a couple times where he's like, hey, mom, is this normal? Like, come and look at this, you know? Whereas I think that with our son, it would have been like a Google on the phone.
Mm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just really noticed that like growth in him. It's like, good. Oh yeah, that's perfect. Like, he's perfect. Like, that's great. But he's coming to me. But that is, you know, since having our first son, that's 4 years of him seeing what it really looks like to be, you know, an authentic, mother. And just, and like, we don't take our children to the doctor. Like, that's big no-no. Like, that was the one, we took him to the hospital and that was not a good experience. And, just, I didn't like that they were poking him and I didn't like that he was away from me.
Did you not know that stuff was going to happen?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
I did, but not, where I went wrong in that first birth experience was I spent way too much time learning about how I was going to have this baby. And I didn't spend enough time, thinking about how I was going to be a mother. So the birth came and it was just kind of like, oh, now I guess I'm just, you know, like, I didn't really know who I was as a mother, I guess is what it was. And I needed to grow into that. And so it's a lot different this time around. And I'm just trying to not be sad about what I didn't know for my son and for my oldest son. Because that was just my path and I walked it and I'm here now and I know better, but yeah.
So what happens between that birth and then you becoming pregnant with this little guy, and what choices do you make differently? Do you have a wild pregnancy? And then tell us this recent story.
Yeah, sure. So, So after my son was born, we started looking at property. We knew we wanted to get out of the city. We were in a city. It was just like a small city. And so just before my son turned one, we bought this homestead that we live on now. So that was a radical shift for us as a family. My husband stopped working in the oil field, and wanted, just got like a job so that he could be home with his family and fill that role. We changed a lot as people. I closed my businesses. And before I was ever pregnant, I thought to myself that I would have a nanny for my children while I ran these businesses. And I was this boss babe. And there was a woman that I worked with who, that was her life circumstance. And I thought, oh, wow, like, that looks wonderful. And then after having my son, and trying to kind of do both, I just realized that my heart was in one place and not in the other. And everything going on in the world, I knew I wanted to be there to homeschool my kids. We were just changing a lot as people. So we moved out to our homestead. We tried to get pregnant the second time for a while. And it wasn't so easy the second time. We did have an 8-week miscarriage at one point, which I just passed at home, and that was that. And I wouldn't have done that any differently either, regardless of how far along we were. And then eventually we did get pregnant a second time. And yeah, had a completely wild pregnancy. And that was just so beautiful, I guess, just to not have anyone interfering with what I knew was going on. Like even at the end, I could tell that he was head down for a few weeks, and I could tell that he was breech for a few weeks. And I just thought to myself, like, why did I need this computer and this device to like, yeah, tell me this? Like, that's so absurd. But I, that's where I was then, and this is where I am now. Yeah. So, when I first, got pregnant this time, I had a little bit of morning sickness. And then one day, in the middle of the night, it just like snowballed into the hyperemesis, which for people who don't know, hyperemesis just means extreme. It's Latin for extreme vomiting, gravidarum during pregnancy. That's all it means. And so it's just like, for me anyways, and women that I've talked to about their experience with hyperemesis, is just an uncontrollable vomiting that doesn't end. So it's like, you don't need to eat anything or drink anything. You just like, it's just stomach bile that just comes up.
And it's quite so gross. And brutal. What's the conflict in GNM?
Yeah. So it depends on like your laterality, and a couple other things. But for me, I have a left-handed laterality. So it was an anger conflict, with a little bit of, what's the word? So when I was a kid, my mom left my dad. He was abusive. And so I had this like kind of like separation from everything that I knew, in an instant. Like I was 4 years old. My mom sat me down. My dad had been taken by the police, and my mom sat me down. Yeah. And said, we're not going to live with your dad anymore. And my dad was never abusive to me. Well, he was like, he wasn't a present father, but he never physically harmed me. So I still kind of had this like, you know, idea of my dad's like, great. Like, I love my dad. Like, I want to live with my dad forever. And so my mom sat me down and said, we're not going to live with your dad anymore. And I like shrieked, screamed for, I think my mom said it was like a minute. Like, she's like, it was the loudest, longest scream, that you could possibly imagine. And so when I had my session with this German new medicine practitioner, he said like that was your DNS, your Dirk-Hammer syndrome, DHS. That was your DHS moment, was that scream. So it was sort of just like this feeling of abandonment. That's the word I was looking for, abandonment and anger together. So once I was able to identify that conflict, then I could really sit with it. And what it took for me, was I apologized to my mom for, cause I had kind of given her a hard time in my life for like leaving my dad, being ignorant to what was actually going on. Right.
Cause he was physically violent to her.
He was. Yep. Physically violent, emotionally abusive. Like,
so it was also just a matter of time before he was to you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, I can say now and know now that my mom made the right choice, and did the best she could afterwards. Yeah. But, yeah, I did. I gave her a hard time as a child and, a young adult for separating me from my dad. So yeah,
a daughter, so it is your job to give her a hard time. Right?
Yes. Yes. I can't wait to find out what my kids give me a hard time about.
It starts so young. I'm really shocked at how young my daughter fucks with me.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? You're only six. How do you already, how are you already exactly like me? And just, it's crazy. Anyway, so you apologize to her.
Yeah. And then the next day I woke up and my symptoms were gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's even something in the, like, you know, even underneath the act of apologizing, just like the willingness to The willingness to sit with it, the willingness to, yeah, like be open to something else. That's really cool. Oh, thank God. I'm so glad.
Yeah. Because that was really scary for me because I thought to myself, if I'm going to be this sick this entire pregnancy, there goes my wild pregnancy. Like, I'm going to be like, it's just going to destroy me because I'm going to need something. And I say need, I mean it when I say it, though I say it also knowing that it's not needed because there is a way out. But if you can't find the door, you need it because, like, you need water to live. And if you can't consume water, you're not going to make it.
Damn.
You know, like it's just, and that's how intense, at least for me, it was. I know that there's like a wide, like, s scope of hyperemesis and how severe it is for people, but like I
Well,
couldn't keep
like
down water.
when women like feel nauseous, they just like label themselves as HG. I'm like, shut up. You know what I mean? Like, there's like what you're describing, puking bile and blood and can't keep a sip of water down. Like, whoa, that is so hardcore and very scary.
Yeah, I lost 20 pounds within, I think it was like 3 weeks, if it was even that. And
Ooh.
I, so that brought me down to 80 pounds.
Whoa. Okay. That's
Yeah,
not.
I just had a baby, so I'm like got baby weight, but as a human, I'm very small. Like, I'm like 5 feet tall, 5'2", I think. Very petite frame, so that was, it was a lot for me to lose that.
Ooh, wow. Okay. So you work it through, you don't have it anymore, you have a wild pregnancy. Anything else you want to share about your pregnancy with him before you tell your 60-hour-old birth story?
No, I mean, really, it was super uneventful, I guess. Yeah, it was just like you said, and well, what in one of your other podcasts, how it's like these stories are really uneventful. It's just that we think they're eventful because we've been told that they should be. But it was like, it was super uneventful. It was just, it was wonderful. It was, I was free. I didn't have anyone telling me, what I should be worried about. I didn't have anyone projecting fears onto me. Yeah, it was just, I was free. I felt like I was in charge, and I was, I am. I was the first time too. I just didn't know it. But yeah, it was wonderful. So like I said, we homestead here. So I assumed that the baby was going to come early because I have been like working in the garden and like doing all of this exercise, you know, that we're told in like old wives' tales, like if you want your baby to come, go weed the garden, you know? And
Well,
so
what
I'm like,
that means is just it helps you pass time. It
yeah,
doesn't
true.
mean that the baby will come early. It's like just
That
go
is
do
true.
something. Yeah.
That is true. So yeah, I guess I got my hopes up for nothing. But I was really thinking baby was going to come early, and then he held on until 40 and 40 and 4. Yeah, is when labor started.
Which is still earlier than the average. Majority
Yeah,
is
I was
out.
prepared to go to 42, like I did with my first. Yeah, so yeah, it was wild. It was so much different than my first. Well, I read Portal while I was pregnant this time, which just resonated with me so deeply on every level. Loved that book. So I kind of was like trying to manifest and call in this like short birth experience. I had a couple visions of myself, just like plopping the baby out on the bathroom floor. Like I was just gonna go into the bathroom to like pee or poop or something, and I was just gonna be like, oh, I think the baby's coming. And so I kind of had
Wow.
that like vision, and which isn't exactly what happened, but yeah, so we did have a pool, and that was the plan, was to have another water birth, which is what I had with my first. I don't think I mentioned that in the story, but yeah, he was, his body came in the water, and his head came in the water as well. So that was the plan. So we were butchering chickens on Sunday, and I started having some surges, but they were like with my oldest, they were very like period-like pains. They were very different than any of the practice contractions, so I was sort of expecting that. This time, they really just felt like practice contractions. And so I like totally didn't think anything of it. I'm like, it's not going to happen. Like, we're probably going to 42 weeks or more. Like, it's nothing. So I wasn't really thinking anything of it. Then they started to get a little bit more intense, where I was like, I had to stop what I was doing during them. But again, I'm like, that's probably nothing. And then they started to get a little bit more regular. So I thought, okay, like this could be it. Like, we'll see. Again, I don't want to get my hopes up, and I'm certainly not going to start watching the clock, because that's just going to make labor seem way longer than it needs to seem. But I did text my mom, because she lives about an hour away, and said, hey, like maybe pack a bag, not promising anything, but just maybe I'll let you know. So then we had a really late supper. We ate at like 9 o'clock, and I've been very hungry this entire pregnancy because I'm not sick. So I get to eat.
Right. Seriously.
And yeah. So, I stopped eating my supper, and I was like, okay, that's odd. Like normally I'm finishing this whole plate looking for seconds. And so I was like, okay, maybe this is something. So I told my husband and my son that I was going to go to bed. We all sleep in the same bed. Usually, but I said, I'm going to go to bed in our bed by myself, and I'm going to try and get some rest. Yeah. You guys just do you. And I'm going to try and get some rest before, baby comes, if it is happening. But then another hour went by before I actually got into bed. So now it's like 10 ish. When I get into bed, and they're kind of picking up, like to the point where I can't fall asleep. Like I'm resting and it's totally easy, and but I'm knowing that this is it at this point, but they're still quite easy. So anyway, so I'm laying in bed, and then they get a little bit more intense. I'm like, okay, well, I'm gonna go have a bath. And because again, I'm like with my son, it was 12 hours from the first contraction to the time he was born. Active labor probably would have been more like 6 hours, but I'm still anticipating like quite a lengthy labor. So I don't want to bother anyone. And I was called to be alone. Like I didn't want a bunch of people in my space. I just wanted to be alone. So I'm not bugging anyone yet. I go have a bath, and then I come back to bed, and things definitely had picked up. So it's 10:47 is the timestamp on the text to my mom, where I said, you should probably just come. Like if you have to sleep on my couch, like at least you're here. And things are picking up quickly is what I said. So my mom gets here. By the time my mom gets here, I'm in it. Like there's no talking in between contractions anymore. I'm in it. And there wasn't even time. Like, you know, you say you're in transition when you say you can't do it anymore. You're like, oh, you're almost there. She's saying that she can't do this for a minute longer. And I didn't even have time to think that I can't do this anymore. I was just like, and it consciously came into my mind, and I just like pushed it aside. I was like, oh gosh, no, you're fine. You got this. You can do this for way longer. And then I started to feel pushy. And this was probably like 11:45. So like an hour after I texted my mom had just arrived, and I'm feeling pushy. And there was like a little bit of fear that kind of crept into my mind, because I thought, okay, this is too early to be pushy. Like with Walker, I was pushy really early, but I had already, you know, been in the pool for a few hours. Like this is way too early. But then I just, you know, close that portal. I'm not going in there. I'm going to, you know, keep going in this direction. Nope. Trust your body. If your body feels like it wants to push, just listen to your body. Your body knows best. So I allowed myself to push a bit.
It's not going to do it wrong.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I just kind of, yeah, let that happen. And then my husband came in the room about 30 minutes later, I would say, to ask me something about the pool, like what temperature I wanted it, or I don't know what. And I was like, I hope it's okay if I swear. I think it is. I was like, don't fucking talk to me right now, or something like super, like I was in it, right? He was like, don't fucking talk to me. And so he was super calm and just knew that, you know, he should just be there and not to say anything more. So he just stayed in the room, and yeah. And then I kind of, I was, there was a lot of counter pressure. That was another thing I was going to say with my breach too, is like you were talking about how women, or how people are told like not to push with a breach, just like wait and wait and wait. Intuitively, I used counter pressure for like probably all 4 hours that I was pushing. I was just, every single time a surge came, I just used counter pressure. And so I think that, you know, again, just listening to my body is what allowed that to work. It's like I needed to push, but I also needed to provide some sort of resistance so that his body didn't come out before the head was ready. And so I was using counter pressure again. And I totally thought that he was breech this whole time. But I think he turned in labor because he was breech in the days like leading up to birth. Yeah. And so anyway, so I'm sitting on the corner of the bed, and I said to my husband, I was like, and I knew that baby was about to come because I went from like dream state to just like dead look him in the eyes. And I was like, baby's coming. And I didn't want the baby to slip out of my husband's hands and fall on like the corner of our bed frame. So I was like, I want to go into the pool. And then I felt the baby like come up. So he was like very far down in the birth canal. And then all of a sudden he kind of like just like sucked himself back up. And I was like, okay, this is my opportunity to go to the birth pool, which was in the other room. And so I get off the bed and I'm like, nope. And go right back down to the floor, hands and knees. And yeah, so he was born on the floor at 12:50 PM. So about 2 hours of active labor, like from the point where I was texting on my phone, just got out of the bath, walking around perfectly fine to emergence.
Right.
AM. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Oof, that's quick, man.
Yeah. It was wild. Fast and furious. But so, I think the difference was fear. Mm-hmm. So even though with my first birth, I, you know, was fearless, I still had so much brainwashing, I guess, that I had allowed to come into my space, that I went into that birth with that fear, even though I said to myself, I didn't have any, I did, I was carrying it with me. Whereas this time I didn't have any of that. Yeah. And I had actively called in this beautiful, fast, safe, autonomous, precipitous birth. And that's exactly what happened.
And you'd done your work.
Mm-hmm.
You'd worked really hard over the last 4 years to be able to arrive at that place.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And
yeah.
So then when does mom and Walker, does Walker sleep through the night and meet baby in the morning, or when does the rest of the fam join?
Yeah. So my mom was out in the hallway, just kind of like, well, she was helping my husband with the pool, and kind of helping with Walker. And I really wanted my son to be there because him and I had both been watching birth videos because I wanted to prepare him for what he was going to see his mom do. So we were watching birth videos together and he was very excited about all of it. And I got it together enough to say, bring Walker into the room, cause he hadn't slept, at all. So he came in and he said, when you ask him what he thought of the whole experience, he says, it was like a train coming out of a tunnel.
All right.
So he was there, he got to watch it. Dad caught the baby. And then a couple days ago, I was still pregnant a couple days ago, a few hours ago, my husband was like, do you think they let dads catch the babies in the hospital? I was like, no, not a chance. And so it just, again, shows me how special it is, not just for the woman, like it's a really big part of the man.
Huge.
Yeah.
The father initiation. I mean, it's huge. In the hospital, they'll get the dad to participate in the abuse. You know, they'll have him hold her leg back while she's being sexually assaulted and cut. They'll have him cut the cord. I've been to so many births where she doesn't want the cord cut, and then they have the dad do it. So then later she's like, you did the thing I didn't want. Like they made you do it. Like it's really quite perverted. Ugh, yeah. Yeah. It's so sad. Yeah. None of it makes any sense. It's obviously completely anti-life. It's completely anti-family. you know, it's like the opposite of everything that it should be, that it's designed to be. And the father initiation in a sovereign birth is like, man, like that father will literally experience hormone bonding that no other dad on the planet will get. You know, like just the physiology of what he will get to be a part of and receive, and the way his brain will change is so important, so needed, you know. And then it's also like kind of really obvious when you see those dads.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah. And like, well, just like the hospital abuse thing. Again, I don't know. And I don't know if there's even any data to support this, because I don't know many women who are allowed to try to have a vaginal breach in a hospital. But that would have been an opportunity for more abuse had I been in a hospital. Like, I'm sure that I would have been cut. Like, I would have had an episiotomy given the 4 minutes between
you wouldn't have
body
even...
and head.
Oh my God, of course. I mean, the chances you would have even gotten to a vaginal situation for breach is very unlikely. And even the air quotes breach doctors often require epidurals, and like they have very certain, like on your back, very certain requirements, and it's all very weird and strange. Yeah.
Yep.
But not you, girl.
It is. Nope. And hopefully not other women who can, you know, hear stories and gain that confidence.
It's happening. You know, I think, you know, part of what this podcast in large part obviously has done is just shown a light on, yes, of course, the free birth stories, but also the system stories and the total nonsense and, you know, coercion and all the stuff that, you know, all the women who previously prior to free birth experience. And I think it just, when it's in your face like that, it becomes a lot harder to justify continuing on that path. Also, it's really clear that like no one on my podcast has any skin in the game. Like they're just like sharing their own personal story, which is just so cool. Like that's done. I always knew for a long time, it always seemed obvious to me that women learned best through personal narrative. That just always seemed in my birth work, like that was how the female brain worked, you know, like it wasn't about 75% of da, 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 da. Like then it wasn't really like that. But women in the middle of labor would, you know, turn to me and be like, remember that one story you told me of that one mom who did this one thing? And I learned really young, like, oh, that's how she's gonna learn. That's how I can teach, is through sharing the stories of women. And so, yeah, this is like a whole new level, obviously, but it's so cool.
Yeah. And now that you say that, so after my son was born, I got very lightheaded. Like my birth that I just had a few days ago. And you had done that hemorrhage podcast, which was phenomenal. And I like all of my friends now are all free birth moms. So we've all listened to it and we all said how wonderful it was. But you talked in that podcast about how it's normal to feel lightheaded after birth and how it's normal to lose blood after having a baby. And yeah, so in that moment where I could have, you know, totally been afraid and been looking for my tinctures and, you know, whatever, I just felt really at ease. And I just listened to my body and I knew I needed some sugar and I knew I needed to just lay down. And again, I listened to my body. And it was that anecdote that I was just like telling myself in my head, like, no, remember that story? Like, you know, it's going to be okay. You're fine. You're perfectly fine. You just had a baby. It's okay to feel this way. And it was.
Beautiful. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Such a surprise. Thank to you find for... out. You just had a little baby. A little bonus.
I did tell your team, like when I booked my time, I told your team, I might have just had a baby on this day. Just letting you know. And they're like, okay, yeah, that's fine. Just like, don't have the baby in the room. I'm like, oh no, that would be too distracting for me. I wouldn't be able to think. So,
yeah. Man, I thought you were going to say, they were going to say, don't have the baby on the episode. I was like, no, we should have done this. Awesome. Well, thank you so much and congratulations. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Yeah, it was an honor.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course, our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive, private, vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention. Death, ascension. I will fly and